Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 938. The Trump and Contrabanda Part 12, Settling In Part 2, subtitled The Underground Reich Comes into Plain View Part 5. This is being recorded on December 15th of the year 2016. Once again, we are going to be taking a look at the Trump administration, what I have termed in the past the underground Reich, now coming into plain view, metamorphosed into an above-ground mass political movement. We're going to take a look at some of the things that are either on the horizon or things that are already taking shape. And we're going to be once again revisiting the issue of the Trump administration, or what I have termed the Trump and Contrabanda, as at one level, not only an underground Reich transformed into an above-ground mass movement, but also in terms of German Ostpolitik. We're going to be taking a look at how the Trump and Contrabanda is or is not going to be approaching geopolitics in Eastern Europe. And I think with the Trump administration, or the Trump and Contrabanda, as I have termed it, poo-pooing the notion that Russia was behind the high-profile hacks and was trying to influence the U.S. election. I think that in and of itself is accurate. I think it is a classic example of a broken clock being right twice a day. But I think in terms of the opposition relationship that is developing between the Trump and Contrabanda, or dominant elements thereof, on the one hand, and the CIA, the mainstream intelligence apparatus of the U.S., and I include major media outlets as a derivative of those, and they're trumpeting, yes, it was Russia behind the hacks, and intoning that Russia intervened in our elections and that that was an act of war. We're going to be taking a look at how this is lining up. And in our next program, we're going to be taking a look at the charges vis-a-vis the election and hacking, high-profile hacks and otherwise, in and of themselves. We are going to introduce that topic in this program. Interestingly enough, a part of the whole propaganda blitzkrieg, which we are hearing from CIA and associated elements, has again been giving credence to the Russia did it version of the high profile hacks. And For the Record programs 923 and 924, we went into those high-profile hacks and discussed why it does not appear that Russia was actually behind those hacks. Then in For the Record 925 and in 926, we took a look at the process of painting Oswald red, something that I think is analogous to what we are seeing in connection with the political maneuvering and posturing around the alleged Russian hacks of the U.S. election. This in the context of Cold War II and, to an extent, Joe McCarthy or McCarthyism Part 2. Interestingly, an anonymous source that was used by the Washington Post for a relatively high-profile propaganda piece alleging that a number of different news sites were pawns for Russian propaganda. This comes from an anonymous organization, online news organization called Prop or Not. And that organization, in turn, appears to have been influenced by and probably incorporates elements of the OUNB milieu, now in power in Ukraine. By the same token, a woman named Alexandra, A-L-E-X-A-N-D-R-A, last name Chalupa, C-H-A-L-U-P-A, who was a key member of the Democratic National Committee and is closely aligned with the OUNB forces in power in Ukraine, has been leading the charge to brand Russia as having tampered with the elections. She appears to be a major source of influence on Hillary Clinton's dives into neo-McCarthyism during the campaign. Those really following our mainstream media, which have been shameless in their uncritical acceptance of new Cold War propaganda. And it would appear that this OUNB, apparent OUNB cat's paw, this woman, Alexandra Chalupa, has much to do with the Clinton campaign's posturing, which on the one hand gave momentum through the Russia did it disinformation about the hacks, and also further impeded Hillary Clinton's campaign with the more liberal or left-leaning branch of the Democratic Party. Hillary Clinton never was successfully able to shake her image as a hawk, and it would appear that Alexandra Chalupa helped to gain the situation in that regard. We're going to be taking a look at the fallout from the election. We're going to be taking a look, too, at a woman named Tulsi, T-U-L-S-I, Gabbard, G-A-B-B-A-R-D. We're going to take a look at her at greater length in our next program. But she was the deputy chairperson of the Democratic National Committee. She then resigned her position in February of this year to go to work for Bernie Sanders. She was interviewed after November 8th by the Trump campaign in connection with the possibility of appointing her to a cabinet position. That has not happened to date. It turns out that Tulsi Gabbard, who was the Democratic, or was the vice presidential write-in candidate for Bernie Sanders on some write-in ballots, such as the one here in California, Tulsi Gabbard is, to a considerable extent, networked with the government of Narendra Modi in India. She's networked with his BJP and with the RSS, that is a Hindu nationalist slash fascist political party that was modeled on the German Nazi Party under Hitler and Mussolini's black shirts. Its paramilitary cadre was patterned after the SS. It was a member of the RSS. Basically, the RSS looms large in the assassination of Mahatma Gandhi, although the assassin himself was described as an alumnus of the RSS, a quote, ex-unquote member. He was given his gun, the gun he used to kill Gandhi, by the head of the RSS. Again, a Hindu nationalist slash fascist party, and all of Narendra Modi's major political appointments have come from the RSS. We have noted in the past that Pierre Omidyar of First Look Media and eBay fame helped to bankroll the ascent of Narendra Modi, just as he helped to bankroll the ascent of the OUNB in Ukraine. Donald Trump we should not be surprised, has some business dealings in India that incorporate people from the BJP. Again, the BJP is the political party of Narendra Modi. It is basically a cat's paw for the RSS. So those are some of the things that we are going to be taking a look at. A major development, something that could fundamentally alter the political realities in this country, even beyond the extent they have already been altered, concerns a couple of things. In early December, a National Defense Authorization Act has a provision in it that will disband the bipartisan board of the Broadcasting Board of Governors. That is the parent group that oversees Voice of America, Radio Free Europe, Radio Free Asia, and the Middle East broadcast networks. It remains inextricably linked with CIA, generally, although the move to have a bipartisan board was an attempt at diminishing CIA influence within Voice of America, Radio Free Europe, Radio Free Asia, and so forth. In fact, the way the agency generally operates is they use their focal point networks, their networks of people inside of other government agencies involving Congress, the White House, the military, what have you, to steer things in their direction. However, the elimination of the bipartisan governing board of the BBG will place that the control of that organization under a single CEO to be appointed by the President of the U.S. In addition to what is described in the article I'm about to read as something that would place not only those foreign broadcast outlets, but the domestic market that now is able to receive their feed, that would place that under the control of a Trump appointee, and many feel that Steve Bannon himself will help to appoint that and shape the administration of the Broadcasting Board of Governors. Beyond broadcasting per se, something we looked at in For the Record programs 891 and 895 concerns the fact that Radio Free Asia has a derivative, the OTF, or Open Technology Fund, that has developed many of the technologies and methodologies that have been approved by people like WikiLeaks, Ed Snowden, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and others that have evidentiary tributaries running in the direction of the far right and or the CIA. So the appointing of a single CEO to be named by the president to oversee the Broadcasting Board of Governors, in addition to its profound effect on broadcasting per se, is going to affect internet activities and no doubt the operations of the Open Technology Fund in particular.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
There was an article about the fundamental changes in the Broadcasting Board of Governors and all that entails. This appeared in Politico of December 12th of 2016. This is by Tara, T-A-R-A, Palmieri, P-A-L-M-E-R-I. Trump to inherit state-run TV network with expanded reach. And this reads in part, a provision tucked into the defense bill guts the Voice of America board, stoking fears that Trump could wield a powerful propaganda arm. This is to be seen, by the way, against the background of what we looked at in For the Record 937, which is the expanded use of fake news by the Trump administration and Trump personally, the assaults on the free press, Trump's banding with other billionaires to file lawsuits aimed at exploiting the vulnerability of various media outlets at this point in time, a time in which media outlets are particularly strained financially due to the enormous inroads of internet and social media networks into the corporate and/or commercial advertising budget. The willingness of Donald Trump, who has stated that he wants to loosen the libel laws, and the same Donald Trump who will be appointing federal judges, including several Supreme Court judges, will now be appointing the head of the Broadcasting Board of Governors, whose actual board, so to speak, has been disbanded. Again, Politico of December 12th of 2016. This by Tara, T-A-R-A, Palmieri, P-A-L-M-E-R-I. Trump to inherit state-run TV network with expanded reach. President-elect Donald Trump is about to inherit a newly empowered Voice of America that some officials fear could serve as an unfettered propaganda arm for the former reality TV star who has flirted for years with launching his own television network. Buried on page 1,404 of the National Defense Authorization Act that passed last week is a provision that would disband the bipartisan board of the Broadcasting Board of Governors, the independent U.S. agency that includes Voice of America, Radio Free Europe, Radio Free Asia, and the Middle East broadcast networks. The move pushed by House Foreign Affairs Chairman Ed Royce as a way to streamline the agency concentrates control into a powerful CEO who is appointed by the president. That change, combined with a 2013 legislative revision that allows the network to legally reach a U.S. audience, which was once banned, could pave the way for Trump-approved content created by the U.S. diplomacy arm, should he choose to exploit that opportunity. Essentially, Trump is finally getting his Trump TV financed by taxpayers to the tune of $800 million per year, and some of the few people in the know aren't happy about it. Quote, Congress unwittingly gave President-elect Trump unchecked control of all U.S. media outlets, unquote. This one more time. Congress unwittingly just gave President-elect Trump unchecked control of all U.S. media outlets, said Michael Kempner, a Democratic member of the board who was appointed by President Barack Obama and was a Hillary Clinton donor. No president, either Democrat or Republican, should have that kind of control. It's a public jewel. Its independence is what makes it so credible, unquote. Well, I would take that with a huge dose of salt. The influence of the CIA in that milieu remains significant, despite superficial moves to diminish that or to dilute that. What I see, however, potentially shaping up is, again, a struggle between what, for lack of a better term, a term used by the brilliant Berkeley researcher Peter Dale Scott, we're looking at something of a struggle between the United States deep state and the Truppenkampfverbande, which I believe is quite simply, again, a front for the underground Reich, which has now transmogrified into an above-ground, mass-based political movement. And I think the stance of the Trump administration toward Russia and Ukraine represents a manifestation of German Ostpolitik, and I think in the struggle between the Russia did the hacks and the Trump administration, and also to an extent between the outgoing board, broadcasting board of governors, or the people who advocate for them, and the new CEO who will be appointed by Trump, I think we're looking at, again, battle lines that are drawn between the U.S. deep state and the Truppenkampfverbande, and those in turn will, I think, they will solidify, they will concretize into the bidding war that I had talked about in, for the record, 918 and 919. I think ultimately the renewed pressures of the new Cold War will, on the one hand, ramp up American accommodation to Germany, and on the other hand, that same pressure and some moderate overtures by Germany and or other European countries toward Russia will result, ultimately, I think that U.S. influence in Europe is going to diminish no matter what. And I think in time, you know, it might be 6 months, it might be 50 years, NATO will in time either dissolve outright or be eclipsed by an all-EU army. In turn, I think there will be a huge trade union. It won't necessarily be formalized in a pact such as NAFTA or something along those lines, but there will be a trade union stretching from Vladivostok to Lisbon, incorporating Russia, its Eurasian Economic Union, and Europe as a whole, although at that point, the EU may be greatly weakened, if not dissolved altogether. But keep your eyes on that. Keep your eyes on Russian accommodation vis-a-vis Ukraine, which is a major food-producing area and is being lustily gobbled up by transnational corporations involved with various aspects of the food production business. Look for an accommodation by Russia, to an extent anyway, with regard to Ukraine. Perhaps Ukraine will be given enhanced EU economic/trade status in exchange for granting autonomy or limited autonomy to the eastern part of Ukraine, that in which the ethnic Russian separatist movement has gained momentum and has been fighting in a civil war for the last several years. Again, I think this is going to be a very long and complex process, but ultimately, I think that the goals of the underground Reich, as articulated in the Burger Zeitung front page editorial, the open letter to Stalin from 1949, and the riposte that took place in 1952, the open letter by Stalin and the Soviet Union, the Soviet open letter on Germany, I think that dynamic is going to play out, and it will play out ultimately to the benefit of Germany. Again, I see the battle lines between the U.S. deep state on one side, the CIA on that side, and the traditional Cold Warriors shaping up, and the Truppenkampfverbande, again, something I think is the underground Reich transformed into a mass political movement. I see them forming up on the other side. Now, more about the Broadcasting Board of Governors from this political article of December 12th of 2016. Note here that the Broadcasting Board of Governors, because of a 2013 modification, can now broadcast in the U.S. as well. So in addition to giving the Trumpenkampf Verbande potential massive control over a foreign broadcast entity and over the internet activities that are being financed through the Open Technology Fund, a CIA-connected subsidiary element of Radio Free Asia, the new changes basically replacing the bipartisan Broadcasting Board of Governors, that board with a single presidential appointment, a CEO. Returning to the Political article from December 12th. The Broadcasting Board of Governors is the largest public diplomacy program by the U.S. government, reaching an audience of 278 million by broadcasting in 100 countries and 61 languages. Skipping down. To date, the 9-member board, which consists of 4 Republicans and 4 Democrats appointed by the president as well as the Secretary of State, has been a part-time operation, but it served as a firewall with the mission of preserving the integrity of the agency's broadcasts. The organization's charter calls for, quote, accuracy, balance, comprehensiveness, and objectivity, unquote. A Republican government official familiar with the agency's work warned that abolishing the board will make it susceptible to the influence of Trump's allies, including his chief strategist, Steve Bannon, who ran Breitbart News before joining Trump's campaign. There's some fear among the folks here that the firewall will get diminished and attacked, and this could fall victim to propaganda, the Republican official said. They will hire the person they want. The current CEO does not stand a chance. This will pop up on Steve Bannon's radar quickly. They are going to put a friendly person in that job. Officials in particular fear that Trump and his allies could change the agency's posture toward Russia, particularly considering how Trump has expressed a positive view of President Vladimir Putin. I think if I were Putin, I wouldn't be too confident because, again, what we are seeing is, in my opinion, is the beginning of the bidding war I forecast in, for the record, 9/18 and 9/19, with the Trumpenkampf Verbande as the voice of the underground Reich / Germany, and now with the mainstream media and the CIA and other intelligence services, and also the right wing of the Democratic Party, which apparently also has some OUNB influence in it, we are seeing the beginning of that bidding war. And there is a conflict shaping up, I believe, between the American deep state, as Peter Dale Scott would have called it, and the Trumpenkampf Verbande. It is going to be fascinating to watch how this plays out. More about how the Broadcasting Board of Governors can now influence broadcasting in the U.S. So if, in fact, Steve Bannon has a like-minded individual elevated to the CEO, remember that Bannon is now Trump's most important advisor on political matters. Because of the modification of the Smith-Mundt Act, that's M-U-N-D-T Act in 2013, the Broadcasting Board of Governors can now broadcast in the U.S. too. But the influence on the domestic market could be even more subtle, the Republican official warned. A BBG CEO influenced by the administration could penetrate established media outlets with packages, series, or other news products produced by the BBG's networks, but picked up and aired by traditional media like Fox News or Breitbart. Many U.S. outlets currently use content from Voice of America. Yes, indeedy. And again, I think when you hear Republicans voicing concern about that, that is the voice of the deep state, which is saying Russia hacked the elections, it's an act of war, and so forth. On the other side, we have the Trump and Confabanda, the underground right transformed into a mass movement above ground, which is expressing traditional German Ostpolitik. And we're going to take a look at how the bidding war that I forecast, and for the record, 918 and 919, is shaping up. It may also very much affect American trade policy, or at least in acts of omission rather than commission. But before leaving the issue of the Broadcasting Board of Governors, and it was not mentioned in this article, but the Open Technology Fund, which is a subsidiary element of Radio Free Asia, which is under the governance of the Broadcasting Board of Governors. That has been one of the leading creators of technology that has been espoused by the so-called privacy advocates who have received funding from OTF.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
Just something to contemplate as you think about Steve Bannon appointing a like-minded individual to head up the BBG. We covered this in one of our previous shows from Alternet of October 6th of 2016, an article by Alex, A-L-E-X, Koch, K-O-T-C-H. Trump campaign leaders made movies comparable to Nazi propaganda. And this is not only about Steve Bannon, but about David Bossie, who was the deputy campaign chair for Donald Trump and the head of Citizens United. Skipping down. Early on, Trump courted the far right, retweeting posts from the Twitter accounts of white supremacists. He also received support from some he apparently didn't court, winning praise from the likes of former KKK leader David Duke, and even made the California ballot as the nominee of a racist political party. Seeing how Steve Bannon had crafted Breitbart News, the right-wing website he ran, into a hub for young white nationalists, the quote alt-right unquote, to bat around conspiracy theories, Trump tapped Bannon on August 17th to be his campaign CEO. As executive chairman of Breitbart, Bannon published deceptive and manufactured stories to aid the right wing and in the presidential campaign, treated his media company as a surrogate for Donald Trump. On September 1st, Trump chose David Bossie, president and chairman of the right-wing nonprofit Citizens United, as his deputy campaign manager. Bossie has produced 25 films with Citizens United Productions, and some of these films feature Bannon as a writer, director, and executive producer. And what this goes on to discuss are comparisons between the propaganda techniques pursued by David Bossie and Steve Bannon and the propaganda techniques that were embraced by Hitler and incorporated into, among other works, the famous propaganda film by Leni Riefenstahl, The Triumph of the Will. It was Bossie's group whose name came to define the unlimited flow of corporate and union cash into elections, thanks to the Supreme Court's decision in the 2010 case Citizens United brought against the Federal Election Commission. At issue was an anti-Clinton Citizens United production called Hillary the Movie, which the FEC had deemed a campaign advertisement subject to regulation based on campaign finance law. The movie was produced for airing in the 2008 presidential election, when many expected Hillary Clinton to be the Democratic nominee. Now, Bossie has joined Bannon, his longtime teammate, to run Trump's campaign of lies and fear-mongering against Clinton. According to the Washington Post, Bossie's job in Trump world is, quote, crafting attacks against Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton, mining past controversies involving her and former President Bill Clinton, and cultivating Trump's bond with conservative activists, unquote. Bossie has hounded the Clintons for decades, beginning in the early 1990s, when he dug up dirt about Bill Clinton when he was still governor of Arkansas. A few years later, U.S. Representative Dan Burton, Republican of Indiana, hired Bossie to investigate Clinton's 1996 campaign fundraising, a post he was later forced to resign. Bossie went on to write a book that blamed the Clinton administration for the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001, and to produce Hillary the Movie with Citizens United. This year, the group sued the State Department for emails and other records of those who served as aides to Hillary Clinton while she was Secretary of State. Bossie is taking a leave of absence from Citizens United during the campaign and also retiring from the Defeat Crooked Hillary Super PAC, which he founded this June. Of course, James Comey, head of the FBI, which played an openly partisan role in the recently concluded campaign, had previously been involved with investigating Mark Rich in the late 80s and early 90s, and then the Bill Clinton pardon of Mark Rich that took place just before Bill Clinton left office. A suit by Vice News is seeking information about the FBI's role in the campaign, and in particular, how a long-dormant Twitter account of the FBI's began tweeting information about the Mark Rich pardon just before the election, right about the same time that Comey announced a new investigation into Hillary's emails, which turned out to be non-existent. About some of the propaganda techniques, the late Andrew Breitbart, founder of the website Bannon went on to lead, called Bannon, quote, the Lenny Reef install of the Tea Party movement, a reference to the infamous creator of Nazi propaganda films. While insisting to a Wall Street Journal reporter in 2011 that his work isn't propaganda, Bannon went on to cite Riefenstahl among his main influences, along with Soviet filmmaker Sergei Eisenstein and progressive documentarian Michael Moore. Ivana Trump, the candidate's first wife, told Vanity Fair in 1990 that her husband kept a copy of Adolf Hitler's Mein New Order, a collection of speeches that display the Nazi dictator's exceptional ability to manipulate reality, in the cabinet near his bed. Perhaps his possession of Hitler's speeches merely indicates an interest in Hitler's genius at propaganda, mused Marie Brenner, author of the article. The Nazi regime produced a massive amount of propaganda. It had an entire ministry of public enlightenment and propaganda headed by Joseph Goebbels. A central technique of Nazi propagandists, according to the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum, was to cast Jews as outsiders and dangerous enemies of the Reich, unquote, subhuman creatures infiltrating Aryan society. Karen Elizabeth Price, a filmmaker who teaches courses on documentary film at Duke University, told Alternet via email that, quote, most successful propaganda films appeal to something that already exists in the viewer, perhaps only as a feeling or germ of an idea, and help to, quote, fill in the blanks, unquote. After Germany had to concede territories and accept blame for World War I and then was hit by the Great Depression, people felt wounded and demoralized. In Riefenstahl's Triumph of the Will, which some regard as the greatest propaganda film of all time, a solution to that despair is presented in the form of a patriotic savior, in this case Adolf Hitler, already hard at work promising to restore Germany to its former power and glory. And again, that is some of the activities, some of the films discussed, and the entire alternate article is in the description to the program. One was called Border War, Stoking Fear, that illegal aliens were the demonic outsider. Also casting the Clintons and Obama in a similar light, and the Occupy protesters from Occupy Wall Street and the various offshoots of that movement as well. Again, it is going to be interesting to see what happens with regard to the BBG. Will it become a sort of global Breitbart? How will that affect the Open Technology Fund? And again, I see in the battle lines being drawn, both with regard to Republican critics of the move that will allow Trump to control the BBG, basically by eliminating the board, and also the face-off now between the Trump and Confabanda, the Trump administration, and CIA and the American deep state over the issue of Russia and the hacks of the election. Again, I do not believe that Russia was behind the high-profile hacks. I believe that the, quote, alt-right, unquote, basically, elements actually associated with Trump, including what I call Team Snowden, were the actual culprits there. Ukraine may very well have been involved. More about that this week and or next week as well.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
There has been a lot of talk since Trump won the election, or won perhaps belongs in quotes, about a looming trade war with China. What is not getting any discussion, at least in our mainstream media, is the possibility, and I don't think it will happen, but the possibility that a trade war between the U.S. and Germany would break out very quickly. I don't see that happening, at least I don't think a real trade war will break out, but we may see something like false news maintaining that, yep, Trump is getting tough with the Germans, which I don't see him doing for a variety of reasons. Not only do I believe that the entire Trump and Confabanda, the Trump milieu, is a creature of the underground Reich, but it is a matter of public record that Deutsche Bank, the largest German commercial bank, the most significant financial institution affiliated with the Barman Capital Network, that has Donald Trump by the short hairs, basically. Trump owns hundreds of millions to Deutsche Bank. This at a time when Deutsche Bank has been openly flaunting U.S. bank regulatory statutes, and Trump is now in a position to determine the fate of Deutsche Bank, at least with regard to the U.S. Justice Department's investigation of Sand. So again, I don't think that Trump is really at liberty to go after Germany, but if he were serious about going after people that have trade surpluses with the U.S., then Germany would be a logical place to start. From Market Watch of November 30th of 2016, opinion, if Trump wants a trade war, starting one with Germany makes more sense. Building a wall along the border with Mexico, launching a trade war with China, scrapping the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and rethinking the involvement of the U.S. in trade agreements around the world. When he moves into the White House in January, President Donald Trump will have plenty of options for making good on his campaign promise to use tariff barriers to rebuild American industry. There is one potential trade war, however, that few people have so far noticed, but which could soon be his easiest target. Germany. Given the size of its population, it runs a far larger trade surplus than China, and a massive surplus with the U.S. in particular. Even better, the industries to pick off are relatively simple to identify and would actually have a chance of creating well-paid American jobs. Skipping down. To most commentators, I'm talking about the cool reaction of Angela Merkel to Trump's ascension. To most commentators, it was a reflection of Merkel's commitment to tolerance and openness, which was certainly among her best qualities. But it may have reflected something else as well. Trump's campaign rhetoric about ripping up free trade agreements and about protecting American industry must sound troubling to anyone who is aware of what keeps the German economy ticking. In Germany, the threat of its massive trade surplus with America has already been noted. The influential and well-connected magazine Der Spiegel ran an article in the wake of his victory, of Trump's victory, saying that Germany was preparing itself for a trade war with Trump's America. Skipping down. Germany's trade surplus is absolutely massive and unprecedented in modern industrial history. Last year, it hit 8.9% of gross domestic product, and it is likely to break through 9% before the end of 2016. Globally, it is second in size only to China's, but given that Germany is a far smaller country, it is only fair to measure it on a per capita basis. And when you look at it that way, Germany's surplus is 7 times bigger than China's. Even worse, China is a developing country, and those are generally expected to run surpluses as they build up industries through exports. Over time, these surpluses come down as domestic demand grows, and that process already seems to be underway in China. In contrast, Germany is a mature industrial economy, and yet its surplus keeps on growing relentlessly. In truth, Germany has become a machine for dumping deflation on the rest of the world. Skipping down. Much of Germany's trade surplus is clearly the result of currency manipulation. Of course, Trump has been accusing China of doing that. The euro has depressed the real value of the country's exports, allowing it to rack up those huge exports. You can argue about whether China's currency is really at its fair value or not, but no one can really dispute that Germany's currency is way, way below that, way below what it would be if it still had the Deutsche Mark. Skipping down. Germany, by the way, I would note that Germany has also engaged in systematic wage suppression, specifically intended to increase exports. And there will be a link highlighted to information about that. The Der Spiegel article alluded to in that story from November 25th, talking about Germany's trade surplus with the U.S., there are plenty of reasons for that. Germany's current account surplus has never been as high as it is this year, and never before has that surplus represented such a significant share of the country's gross domestic product. Making matters worse is the fact that the U.S. is the largest consumer of German exports. Skipping down. As high as it is, though, the current surplus is likely to continue growing. The recent fall in the euro's value relative to the dollar following Trump's election makes German products and services even more competitive. And many economists believe that the value of the dollar will continue to climb, which means that the value of the euro against the dollar will shrink correspondingly. Their predictions are based on recent indications that Trump's announced economic stimulus policies will push up both America's sovereign debt load and its interest rates. There is the thought that perhaps since one of the things that I predicted and something that I covered in For the Record 931, since Trump was elected, his isolationist pronouncements have given momentum to the German-led drive to establish an all EU military led by Germany. And there will be a link in the description for this show to an article about Germany buying some C-130 logistical transport aircraft from the U.S. The theorizing in this linked post is that the projected all EU military buildup may increase Germany's military purchases or the EU's military purchases from the U.S. This may, in fact, diminish the accounts surplus that the current accounts surplus that Germany has with the U.S. and the trade balance surplus. I suspect that what we will see is something along the lines of the carrier corporation grandstanding of recent weeks. I think that if, in fact, Germany does purchase some American military technology, the actual impact of that on the German-American trade imbalance will be propagandized, who knows, perhaps by the mega federal Trump TV that is forecast with the dissolution of the Broadcasting Board of Governors. I don't think that Trump is going to engage in a real trade war with Germany because, again, those are the people who have him by the short hairs, Deutsche Bank in particular. But it may be that an increasing all EU military, maybe purchasing some of its equipment from the U.S., that will receive a lot of media propagandized coverage in effect, and that will lead us to thinking that, well, yep, since Germany is buying a lot of American military equipment, that is reducing the trade surplus. Again, one is going to be dependent on the integrity of the Trump administration to accurately relay facts to us. Another interesting thing that's going to be playing out is just exactly how Donald Trump's stated insistence on maintaining his business empire through his children is going to affect the actions by foreign leaders to affect Trump of U.S. policy. There was an article in Newsweek of December 13th of 2016. This is an article by Kurt, K-U-R-T, Eichenwald, E-I-C-H-E-N-W-A-L-D. How Donald Trump's business ties are already jeopardizing U.S. interests. And this talks about the fact that the Trump real estate empire has branches in many countries, and this will permit foreign leaders to curry influence with Donald Trump by basically massaging the business interests of the Trump empire in that country. By the way, Newsweek is now under the control of an alumnus of the Unification Church, a Japanese-born alumnus of the Unification Church. It is not the old Newsweek. Not that the old Newsweek didn't have plenty of flaws, but the new Newsweek appears even more flawed. Nonetheless, this is a useful article. One of the things that is typical of the paradigm that we'll be looking at in connection with Trump's holdings, and this concerns one example provided here by Kurt Eichenwald in the Philippines. One thing is clear, however. The Trump family has an enormous financial interest in keeping Duterte. He's the newly elected leader of the Philippines who has been basically conducting a vigilante campaign against drug dealers or reputed drug dealers. Continuing, Trump Tower at Century City in Makati, Philippines, is on the verge of completion, with potential buyers having placed deposits on at least 94% of the condominiums, according to Century Properties, the Trump Organization's business partner there. during the U.S. presidential campaign, Trump's sons, Donald Jr. and Eric, traveled to Makati to shovel some dirt in the ceremony to celebrate the structural completion of the building. Duterte recently, and this concerns a very interesting individual. So under the deal, that's the deal Trump has struck that will allow his children to carry on his business empire. So under the deal, Trump's children will be paid millions of dollars throughout their father's presidency by Jose E.B. Antonio, A-N-T-O-N-I-O, the head of Century Properties. Duterte recently named Antonio the special government envoy to the United States. The conflicts here could not be more troubling or more blatant. President Trump will be discussing U.S. policy in Southeast Asia with one of his or his children's business partners, a man who is the official representative of a foreign leader who likens himself to Hitler. Also note that the Trump family has an enormous financial interest in Duterte's deadly campaign. Rooting out crime in the Philippines is good for the real estate values. And that is cited as an example of how Trump's business empire could be used to exert pressure on him. More about that business empire from the New York Times of November 27th, 2016, by Richard C. Paddock, Eric Lipton, Ellen Barry, Rod Nordland, Danny Hakim, and Simon Romero. World of Potential Conflict for a Developer President. And this talks about the Trump empire's holdings in India. Mr. Trump's partner in the Trump Tower, Mumbai, is the Lodha Group, founded by Mangal Prabhat Lodha, vice president of the BJP, currently the governing party in parliament in Maharashtra state. The Lodha Group has already negotiated with the U.S. government. It announced a landmark purchase of a property known as the Washington House on Pony Altamont Road from the American government for 3.75 billion rupees, or almost $70 million. His partner in an office complex in Gurgaon, G-U-R-G-A-O-N, near New Delhi, is IREO, whose managing director, Lalit Goyal, is the brother-in-law of a BJP member of parliament, Sudhanshu Mittal. Mr. Mittal, in an interview, denied having any connection with the real estate company. And very quickly, we're going to go into Tulsi Gabbard next week. But Tulsi Gabbard was being met with Donald Trump, and it was discussed that they were discussing a potential cabinet appointment. Steve Bannon is a big fan of Tulsi Gabbard. He also is a big fan of Narendra Modi. Keep that in mind. This from the Times of India. Tulsi Gabbard, U.S. Congresswoman, calls on Modi. Tulsi Gabbard, the first Hindu-American in the U.S. Congress, called on visiting Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi here Sunday and presented him with a ginger flower garland from Hawaii. Gabbard, a strong supporter of Modi, is a Democratic congresswoman from Hawaii. Skipping down. She has spoken to Modi after his victory in the Indian general elections and congratulated him and the BJP. She has also been involved in the planning of Modi's U.S. visit and had last month met two BJP leaders, Vijay Jolly and, I'm not going to attempt the pronunciation, in that connection. And still more. From Quartz, the blog in India, by Manu, M-A-N-U-B-A-L-A-C-H-A-N-B-R-A-N, Balachandran, from March 2nd of 2016. Tulsi Gabbard, the first Hindu in U.S. Congress on Modi Hinduism and linking Islam to terror. Speaking at a fundraising event for the BJP in August of 2014, Gabbard said that Modi's election victory was only possible because, quote, people stood up one by one by one and said, we will demand that this change occurs. Gabbard was treated as royalty on her visit to India last year, as she hobnobbed with the Indian Prime Minister and Foreign Minister, among others. The Telegraph, a Kolkata-based newspaper, called her the Sang's mascot in the U.S. The Sang, S-A-N-G-H, a moniker for the RSS, is a right-wing Hindutva organization and the ideological guardian of the BJP that rules India now. That was the group that killed Gandhi. We're going to talk more about various things, including Tulsi Gabbard, in our next program. We're also going to go into many things that I had intended to discuss in the program being now underway. Those will have to wait, however, including the appointment of Rex Tillerson, the head of ExxonMobil, to be Secretary of State. That and OUMB links to the Democratic National Committee. These will be highlighted in future programs. This concludes For the Record 938, the Trump and Confabanda, Part 12. Settling in, Part 2, The Underground Reich Comes into Plain View, Part 5, being recorded on December 15th of the year 2016. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.